Good afternoon and welcome to this WFPL Back to School special. I'm Devin Katayama. A growing 100,000 Jefferson County public school students are preparing for the first day of school tomorrow. They'll be met with brand new challenges, whether it's making new friends, reading new books, or learning new skills. And likewise, the school system those kids are entering is also undergoing constant change, updates, and hopefully some improvements along the way. With us today is the superintendent of JCPS, Donna Hargens, who's graciously joined us here at WFPL every year for our annual Back to School special. Dr. Hargens, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I imagine as we get near the first day of school, you're as anxious, maybe as excited as many of the students themselves. And I know that this is a time that you also look forward to. This year, the state legislature passed a budget in favor of education, restored millions of dollars that were either lost or went elsewhere after the recession. What specifically is going to be inside classrooms that money will be spent on?
Well, and actually, one of the most important things is obviously the steps and 1% increase for our employees. So that is really a $17 million price tag on that. Textbooks have been restored. Some extended school has been restored. And we've been working hard for 3 years to make sure that we're putting every dollar that we can in the classroom. So from our budget, what people will see is more support, mental health professionals supporting schools and supporting students. We'll have content-specific goal clarity coaches, making sure that teachers are supported. So it's all about the support right where it makes the most difference, which is where the student is impacted.
You mentioned the mental health counselors. That's actually one of the things that when I heard that those were going to be added to some, I think, 15 schools. Is that correct?
That's correct.
When we talk about education, we often talk about mental health of students and having even wraparound services inside the schools. How are the schools chosen?
Well, actually, it's where the need is, but there'll also be mental health counselors that then move throughout the areas. And the whole point is when a student needs that kind of support, to really make sure that that support is given as quickly as possible. Again, so that once that's taken care of and that need is met, students can focus on learning. So one of the things our principals told us as we listened to them is those issues are escalating. So we need to put more support at that level close to where the school is so that students can be supported on a daily basis.
We have seen more wraparound services like mental health services, like social services inside JCPS, but also schools around the country, like you mentioned. Is that a model, that wraparound service model, something that all schools should adopt? And if so, what is that an investment that the public should make?
Well, and actually, it is an investment that we need to make. It's necessary because we won't get to the learning part if we don't take care of those needs. And of course, there are family resource centers. And even when the funding didn't completely cover that, our Board of Education covered it. So there is a family resource center coordinator in every school.
I want to turn to the equity scorecard. And for those who don't know what the equity scorecard is, it was a district-wide scorecard. It kind of showed various measurements ranging from students' response to how they feel inside of a school to also achievement levels in certain schools. And it kind of showed where their disparities do exist. Are we expecting to see those for school-by-school basis, and if so, when might that happen?
Yes. John Marshall, the chief equity officer, his team is working to actually roll those out so that each school will get an individual report card or an equity card. You could look at the equity scorecard at a district level and say, well, the district has a problem. Well, now get narrow and say, at your particular school, where are the variances? How do you compare to other schools? And maybe there's something in that data that informs how you can address that inequity.
Has there been a good response to the equity scorecard? When they first came out, I remember there being a really strong response. And I wonder if there's anything that's come out of those equity scorecards, either new programs or new people that have jumped on board and just said, you know, I want to be a part of this.
Well, I think what the community certainly has done is stand ready to be supportive. So what we know is that in order to close those differences, those gaps, we're going to have to do intentional things. So there are things like Everyone Reads. There's a program called the Watchdog Program that is really, it's dads of great students, but it can be any adult, that you actually put adults in schools to help support students so that every minute is maximized and they get the support of lots of adults. So I think when you see that that's the need in a particular school, then you can put a program like that in it, in the school to address any kind of gap in opportunity or achievement. Or even one of the schools said that only a small percentage of students hear messages that post-secondary is important or that college is important. Well, we know we have work to do in that school to instill that message is there for every one of our students.
You mentioned the Everyone Reads program, probably one of the more the best promoted programs citywide, and it's one that I think most people can certainly appreciate. But are we seeing the type of participation that you'd like to see with that program?
Well, we're trying to actually rebuild that. At its prime, it was 8,000, almost 8,000 adults in buildings saying reading is important, you're important. And we know we need to build that number back up. And not only was it important for the student, but we had 8,000 adults who had firsthand information and they know the work that's going on in schools. So between Everyone Reads rebuilding and then the Watchdog program rebuilding, which again are adults in cafeterias and classrooms, we know that we can build up the volunteer support. And we have lots of mentor programs and lots of organizations that are pushing into schools. But we know that the need is great in Jefferson County, so that we know that we have to scale up all of those programs if we're going to move the needle for the district.
Jefferson County also continues moving toward different strategies to address behavior issues and also try to reduce the out of school time punishments. We also adopted the new code of conduct this year. Do you think that we are where we need to be with that student code of conduct? It seems like it's obviously updated looked at every year, but updated maybe every couple of years. Is it where you'd like it to be right now?
Well, I think it's moving in the right direction. So one of the things that we're excited about is adding restorative practices into the code as an option for schools. So we know that, and we're doing positive behavior intervention support training in schools. So we know that we're doing a lot of things. And the whole point of that is to not, if a student actually commits an offense that is suspendable, that student will be suspended. What you're trying to do is intervene and be proactive in helping kids learn so that they don't commit those offenses that are suspendable. So you sort of have to head it off. So I'm very encouraged by the progress. Lots of people put a lot of time in it, and it's moving in the right direction. And of course, we know that we're going to be monitoring it very closely and continue to move it even further in that direction.
You did mention the restorative practices, and I know that's one thing that Clout has been really pushing to have either district-wide or at least try out in some schools, and this idea of dealing with student behavior right there, coming up with innovative or creative solutions to some issues that might arise between students. Are you aware of any schools that would like to do that wholeheartedly and all in and go through the whole? Because I know it's a program too. That it's a concept, but you can also pay to go through a whole program. Are you aware of any schools that are interested?
Well, actually, we've done training, and Dr. Dawson from U of L actually is an expert in restorative practices, and she's done training. Again, what you don't want it is in some places. You really want equal access to the opportunity. When I make a bad choice, to learn from that choice, learn how it impacted others, and have the chance to, when confronted with the same choice again, to not make it. To me, that's what restorative practice is about. And we know that has to be accessible everywhere. So we had to come up with a way that we could embed it in the code of conduct and make it accessible everywhere.
We've been speaking with Jefferson County Public School Superintendent Donna Hargens. The first day of school is tomorrow for more than 100,000 students. And while that number has steadily grown over the years, one student group has been growing at a faster rate. Students who speak English as a second language, also called ESL students. They receive extra services to help them catch up. In the past decade, the number of ESL students has nearly doubled to around 4,800. It's still a small number relative to the larger student body, but these students struggle with language, have lower than average graduation rate, and they need more help. And they're becoming increasingly prevalent in the community. I caught up with one student, Nuruddin Hussein, who's an 18-year-old JCPS student, but is a sophomore. He and his family are Muslim. They've been living in Malaysia as refugees after his parents left Burma because of anti-Muslim violence. I met him at his house in Newburgh. Did you know anything about Kentucky or Louisville?
I just know Kentucky Derby, about the horses, you know, the race.
Hussein says because he and his siblings weren't Malaysian citizens, he couldn't get many basic services that should be available. So no school.
No school.
What about jobs for the older kids?
No job, no job.
Why not?
Because we don't have like a citizen card. We don't have ID from the...
And you were in Malaysia because it was too dangerous in Burma?
It's really dangerous. And Burma, they killed Muslims.
In 2013, Hussein and his family were among the roughly 2,000 refugees resettled in Louisville. While that number is a slight increase from the past year, the number of child refugees increased at a greater pace, and officials with Kentucky's refugee offices expect a similar trend this year. Hussein says when he moved to the U.S., he knew several languages, but English wasn't one of them.
First, I come in there, I just quiet, and when I go class, I quiet, and I listen what he's saying. But I don't understand what the teacher talking about, but I listen, I don't talk.
Hussein quickly learned English, and he credits the JCPS Newcomer Academy, which serves students who struggle most with the English language. An increase in refugee students is partly why the Newcomer Academy saw an increase in enrollment last year.
We're walking through the hall right now, and there's many cabinets. There's no storage rooms up here, because if there was room for storage, I'd have desks and teachers in there, basically. We have grown so quickly, especially in the last year.
Gwen Snow is the associate principal of Newcomer Academy.
What might it sound like walking through the halls on a normal day?
Oh, wow. It's awesome. It's the best experience. Students are talking to each other. There's maybe 20, 30 different languages going on at one time.
Snow says last year's 24% student body growth during the school year surprised everyone. And Newcomer ended last school year with over 500 students. They had to expand space in the middle of the year. Snow attributes part of that growth to the increase in unaccompanied minors who are making their way from Central America. That's a story that's also been making headlines nationally. JCPS officials know where their ESL students live in Jefferson County. That's why they say the district has strategically placed its nearly 70 ESL programs in specific areas to accommodate these students. And next year, Iroquois High School, which is in the South Louisville neighborhood where many newcomer students live, will serve as host of the first intensive expansion program called the International Academy that will be similar to Newcomer.
We are looking at just having a duplicate or a mirror program of this, another newcomer site, but that site would be inside of a school where the students are. They reside in that area. Their parents live there. They live there. And that's the school that they would end up transitioning out to anyway.
Iroquois High School principal Chris Perkins says he expects 100 new students to participate in the program.
Kind of exciting. We're kind of anxious, too, because, you know, there's so many of us that, you know, haven't had the opportunity to work with students with those circumstances before. So it's hard to anticipate exactly what all they're going to need.
Perkins says when he arrived at Iroquois High 8 years ago, there were only 30 international students. With the addition of the International Academy, he expects to have around 280 foreign students this year, most of them seeking ESL services. And we turn back now to our interview with JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens, who says the district knows they need to expand ESL and have qualified ESL educators, which aren't always easy to find.
When you know that that population is growing, you don't want to be surprised by that and say, why didn't we get ready for this? So we're in the process of building capacity and building different sites in our facilities plan to make sure that we're prepared for that growing population.
Seems like there's a lot of new student groups that we need to be prepared for. The 2015-2016 school year, obviously one of the larger stories statewide is this increase in the dropout age from 16 to 18. I think we're expecting hundreds more students who would have otherwise dropped out to now be in the school system, and it sounds like thousands more maybe who are going to be on the watch list for maybe being at risk, maybe truancy. Are we ready for that? Are we ready with the programs and with the personnel in place and the teachers for the higher dropout age?
Well, we have some schools that have alternative learning strategies, like Jefferson County High School and the virtual school, and also Liberty and Phoenix. And we know that we need to continue to improve those schools because the schools need to adjust around the needs of that kind of learner. The students that drop out, it's not that they're not bright, it's that school doesn't make sense to them. So we know that we have to adjust around the needs of the students. We don't want to lose any student. That's not good for Jefferson County. That's not good for Louisville. Raising the dropout age to 18 gives us more time but we're going to have to be different to adjust around the students.
So over the next year, is there going to be a plan of action to kind of deal with the additional students? And that might look like, you know, we have counselors who do some professional development where they know the options really well of what, you know, what a particular student can go to. I would imagine over the next year, there's going to be some sort of either plan in place or something?
Absolutely. We have a group going to the Dropout Conference to, again, share best practices and learn from the best practices at the conference. And we know that we have to take what we currently have and build a system that really meets the needs of students and that adjusts around them.
We'll take a short break and be back with more stories and more conversation with JCPS School Superintendent Donna Hargens. Stay with us. Welcome back to WFPL's Back to School Special. I'm Devin Kadayama. Jefferson County High School students have a wide range of options when it comes to the district's school choice system. But how much of that choice is swayed by the people within the schools, like principals and administrators, through program marketing strategies and outreach to potential students? WFPL's Jake Ryan talked to parents, principals, and district officials to find out how much influence, if any, individual school marketing has on school choice.
Katie Zeitz has been the principal at Wagner High School since 2011.
I think it's much more about not just trying to cram your school down people's throats, because I think people can see that a mile away, and I don't want to do that. What I want is people to come to Wagner for the right reasons, because they're going to be happy then and stay.
Zeitz says she wants students to seek out schools based on programs that align with their interests, not because a principal or school administrator wants to boost enrollment numbers or attract cohorts of high-performing students who can raise test scores.
What I want to do is grow authentic engagement back from parents and kids. I do not want to beg, plead, or take away from others to grow mine. What I want is for kids and parents to see the value in what I and my staff are offering.
This process of letting students and parents see success for themselves is the evidence-based marketing Zeitz likens to showing off. Zeitz focuses on touting the success of her current students rather than seeking out other high-performing students because she knows that when good students see good things happening at a school, they take notice. And that is really the best type of marketing.
My biggest mission in life is not going out and finding people and convincing them to come to Wagner. It's when the people decide to come that they stay because they're happy. That there is no better marketing or attraction than that.
Wagner has an enrollment of about 750, but has room for about 500 more. In the 2013-14 school year, 203 students attended Wagner from outside of the local school zone known as the Reside Cluster. That's just 38% of the students that live in that zone. These low enrollment numbers are not all that troubling to Zeitz. She says the numbers are slowly climbing, but overcoming the stigma that can come with being labeled a priority or low-performing school is not a quick fix. Wagner has had that designation since 2010. It's based on test scores. What does trouble Zeitz is when someone's misperceptions about a school play a factor in their decision-making process. That, she says, is the biggest challenge to marketing a school.
Many folks wonder, well, I mean, if things are so amazing, why aren't your scores the same as such and such school? And there are assumptions made that aren't accurate about things like parent involvement and quality of teaching staff.
It's these assumptions and misperceptions that can often overshadow a school's unique programming or lead a parent or student to scratch a potential school off the list that could have been the perfect fit. This was nearly the case for Gay Adelman. She moved to Louisville in the summer of 2013 with her son as he was preparing to enter his freshman year of high school. Having moved several times, she says the process of finding a school in Louisville is a bit different than other places in the country.
We would move, we would try to pick out schools and then choose a house. And here it's a little bit different. You can pick your house and then decide what school you want to go to.
And picking out a school can be daunting. There are 23 high schools in the JCPS system offering more than 91 programs, not to mention the option of private schools. But it is a task Adelman and her son welcomed. She says they came in with an open mind, with no preconceived notions about any particular school. So when Adelman and her son decided on the academy at Shawnee, she was surprised at the reaction she got from some people.
As we got involved in the community and started talking with realtors and, you know, various people who have opinions about the district, people actually tried to talk us out of going here.
But what Adelman found in the academy at Shawnee was anything but reflective of the community opinion. Her son has flourished in the nation's only aviation-centered magnet program. He is a straight-A student taking multiple AP classes. He's involved in the ROTC and wants to attend the Naval Academy. Adelman had to dig to find out what all the school offered, like the AP classes. She says examining what a school has to offer is a parent's responsibility, but believes schools should work to make information readily available, which is something the Academy at Shawnee did not initially do. She has now committed herself to spreading the word about the school, helping create a website and launch a parent-teacher association. Adelman says she would now like to see the district dedicate more resources to individual school marketing.
Schools don't have the resources to, or the staff with the background in marketing to really identify that brand and hone in on that brand, and then they don't have the budget to market that message out to the community.
But district officials say JCPS isn't in a position to help individual schools develop marketing plans to attract students. Ben Jackie is a JCPS spokesman.
There are large school districts like ours that actually do have full-time devoted employees who do nothing but marketing. We don't have that because what we can't get into is we're helping one school more than another.
For Katie Zeitz at Wagner, she says she has ample resources for getting the word out about the school, but in the end, it's not about marketing or selling a school to a student. It's about recognizing a student's interest and being willing to direct them to a program that has the ability to allow a student to be engaged and thrive.
And wherever has all that, and they walk in the door and they feel comfortable, that's where they need to go. And if it's Wagner, it's Wagner. If it's J-Town, it's J-Town. If it's Seneca, it's Seneca. I never try to be a salesman. That's not what I am. I'm a principal that's proud of their school and wants to attract families that are going to be happy in our community. That's what I want to do.
And that was WFPL's Jake Ryan reporting. We'll be joined by Jake in just a couple of minutes, but first we turn briefly back to our interview with JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens, who agrees with Zeitz that you should not judge a school only by its test scores.
It's really the individual that's important. So I think some of our schools that maybe don't rank as high, it really diminishes the success of lots of the students in the school that don't get talked about.
When you visit schools, just like when I visit schools, I'm sure you get a feel for some schools that just feel very welcoming and maybe others that don't. For those that don't, how do you as a superintendent address that respectfully and address that in a way to maybe offer some ideas for improvement?
Well, and actually, it's not only a visit to a school, but also survey data and data that you can refer to. Overall, parents are 91% satisfied with their school. But when you actually drill down into an individual school, you're going to see a wide range. So that's the point at the conversation starts to happen between the area superintendent and the principal and the principal and the staff, is why do we rank so much lower in that satisfaction level than every other school or even schools like us? So I think the data becomes the catalyst for conversation. Then every school has a comprehensive school improvement plan, where when you notice something in the data that needs to be improved, you write it in your plan, which is visible to the public, and then what are the strategies to address that data point? So for some schools, it is an achievement. It might be reading. For some schools, it's something in the survey. I always think we have the best jobs in the world because we get to pause ever so briefly, but we get to begin again and begin new again. And if you're beginning the same way that you began last year, you're not learning from the data and what you're hearing. You should be getting better every year.
And I want to turn back to WFPL's Jake Ryan, who was at last night's school board meeting where a couple of things happened. The first being an update on recommendations from the JCPS Magnet School Review. And this was a review that JCPS received earlier this year, and it recommended that some of the schools be phased out completely and other magnet schools be improved. What did we learn last night?
Last night, it was recommended district officials recommended to the school board to phase out 4 magnet programs. These programs will go through this school year. At the end of this school year, they will be no more. Those are magnet programs at Jacob, McFerrin, Rangeland, and Rutherford Elementary Schools. The district approached all the principals at all the schools that recommendations were made for. Those 4 principals said they were just not interested in improving their magnet. They wanted to focus on school instruction instead.
Was that a surprise to some folks that the magnet schools would actually be phased out completely?
I think so. I think that it was expected the district would just present an update on how they're going to act on the recommendations, not necessarily come with just recommending to close down 4 schools right off the bat, or 4 programs right off the bat. But that's what happened. 10 other schools are going to be developing plans of action to address the recommendations. There's about 26 recommendations, and that's expected to take about 5 years for all of those recommendations to be addressed by all of those schools.
And the money that would have been spent on the magnet programs at those 4 schools, what's happening with that?
It's interesting. Each of those four schools will be eliminating 1 magnet resource position, which equals to about $65,000 a school. And those funds could be reallocated to help fund Schools of Innovation winners.
That were announced last night. And we'll talk about the Schools of Innovation winners a little bit later on the program. And again, the magnet schools are a large part of JCPS's school choice system, something that it consistently touts as giving parents a lot of options when they're choosing a school for their child. So this is definitely something to watch in the future. Also within that review was this idea that the magnet schools, which are supposed to attract a diverse student body, aren't actually that magnetic, and that the more competitive families seem to have more success at getting their child into the school of their choice. I asked Superintendent Donna Hargens about that. A lot of parents who know how the system works and who want their kid to go to a really good school will work really hard to get them into that school. It's almost like a college application process in some of these circumstances. Is that the way a magnet program should work? Should parents work that hard, or should there be more of a random pick like I think the review suggests?
Well, the magnet review actually does suggest maybe moving away from all of the actual parents collecting documents and bringing them to the school. And there needs to be a way to streamline that. And so they did ask us to look at that, and we will be looking at that, is the amount of information and also the opportunities, the access to the opportunities of our magnet school. So not only what you actually use to apply and who actually provides the data, and then also can we provide more access to our families and more transparency regarding how those selections are made.
I want to turn to one listener who called in, James, and he asks this question.
With the evidence of success of the J. Graham Brown School academically, and with the incredible amount of interest in that format for a school, why is it that the Jefferson County Public Schools have not tried to duplicate this successful program in each of the districts that are each of the divisions of the district?
So I guess a question which you might actually receive often or maybe every year, this idea of why not replicate some of the programs that have been working?
Well, and one of the things that makes the Brown School successful is this ability to seamlessly go through K-12 without the transitions. So that's a great concept. So what people may notice is that, for instance, the 7th, 8th, and 8th grade Valley Prep at Valley High sort of seamlessly puts you from 7th and 8th grade into high school. So we are doing different grade level configurations to see if we can minimize the impact on transition. So to me, what the Brown School does is do that. And the other thing, there are many characteristics that make it successful, one of which is the small size of it. So those are things to be looked at to replicate. But also, we're always looking at, because we're a system, what's the impact of anything on the whole? Because we're not individual schools competing. We're a system of schools that has to work together for the benefit of all the students.
And we turn back now to WFPL's Jake Ryan, who's here to talk about another decision that was made by the school board last night. They've chosen two of the four proposals to move forward with and to design the next JCPS school. Jake, if you can, just tell us what these two proposals are.
The winners were the Catalpa School and the Louisville Reach Academy. Both were designed by JCPS teachers. The Catalpa School is a Waldorf-style education program encompassing preschool through fifth grade students with the possibility of expanding into a middle school. The Louisville Reach Academy will be a community hub styled program with wraparound services, including medical services, social services for students and their families, and will be a year-round school. It'll also be the district's first K-8 program.
Any idea where these schools are going to be located, how much they're going to cost?
They're going to be located in school reside clusters with a high concentration of low-performing or at-risk students. The costs aren't yet decided upon, but that's part of the next steps the district will work to address.
And when might students actually be in these schools?
2015-2016 school year.
Any idea what's happening to the other proposals?
They're not going to be completely forgotten about. The district will work with the designers to develop more specific plans in terms of cost and programming, and then bring those back to the board for further consideration.
Was this a surprise, the vote to unanimously approve both these proposals?
I think it was. I was expecting just one school to come through, but two schools are going to come through. The board was a little taken off at first, but I think it was a unanimous decision, so apparently it has support.
All right, Jake, thanks for the update.
No problem. Thanks.
And we'll turn back now to my interview with JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens. If the School of Innovation is successful, and I know JCPS is really hoping that it will be, should JCPS either expand the things that worked or seek more waivers from KDE, or at least replicate some of the things that they are trying out in the School of Innovation that a lot of the other schools don't do?
Actually, the School of Innovation process, and just the whole process, it went from really wide, 82 letters of intent, 45 applications, 12 semifinalists, 4 finalists. So obviously, to get to the finalist state, there are really great ideas in there. And that's exactly what you incubate, you try things, and then you replicate them. So when they work, you can expand them. So we're very interested in doing innovative things, and also the waiver process, districts of innovation. KDE has encouraged districts of innovation to ask for waivers, to think outside the box, to do things differently. So we think this is a wonderful opportunity. And it's been this conversation around, months of conversation around innovation and learning and how we can help our students learn more. So that's been an exciting process. But absolutely, again, you don't want a handful of kids to benefit. Eventually, you want lots of kids to benefit from the innovation.
We'll take a short break and be back with more stories and more conversation with JCPS School Superintendent Donna Hargens. Stay with us. Welcome back to WFPL's Back to School Special. I'm Devin Katayama. We'll rejoin our conversation with Superintendent Donna Hargens momentarily, but first, it's been 3 years since Kentucky implemented the Common Core standards that are supposed to make what students learn in English and math consistent across states and help them better prepare for college and careers. Kentucky was the first of 45 states to adopt the new standards, but since then there's been pushback from states like Indiana that have backed out of the Common Core. But in Kentucky, despite some lawmakers and others who disapprove, the state has moved forward. It's been a rocky road for some teachers, and in a survey, around half reported in the first year that they would like more support. We've decided to take a look at how one educator is teaching the Common Core standards. This story is about fifth graders here in Louisville learning Common Core math wherever they want, at home or even here in the studio with me.
We were learning today about how to graph and where are the coordinates of the graph.
That's Rachel Miller, who just graduated from fifth grade at Carter Elementary. She's sitting in front of her laptop, showing me how a computer game called Minecraft helped her with this Common Core standard. Graph points on the coordinate plane to solve real-world and mathematical problems. Just to be clear, though, Minecraft is not real world.
And I'm Dark Angel that has dress at the bottom kind of tore up with brown hair, blue eyes, and black and red wings.
Everything in the game looks like it's made of Legos.
Welcome to Iceland, and it's always white, snowing, and there's this brick castle and it looks kind of abandoned, but it's not. We go over to this tower, and we have to move these dots by moving on a pressure plate.
Elsewhere in the game, Rachel and her classmates built an entire community, putting up houses, stores, even coffee shops, a world she's continued to build over the summer.
We wanted a way to engage our students outside of the classroom. We knew a lot of them already played Minecraft.
Fifth grade teacher Jason Hubler set up this version of the game that Rachel's using. He says it's encouraged his students to think about and grapple with complicated math concepts from lots of different angles.
It's not a series of give me this answer, give me this answer, give me this answer. It requires the students to think, well, what am I being asked? Because it asks in various ways.
And purple was on it because zero's on the corner. On if you go on X axis, it's supposed to be on the number zero.
Here's what's happening. Rachel's character is standing on top of a tower looking onto a huge grid. Emphasis on the word grid. Remember the core standard. She steps on various plates that light up different colors on the grid. If Rachel needs help and Mr. Hubler's online, she can ask him.
We're able to sit there and interact with our students and still help reinforce content. And it really helped to build our classroom community because we got to know these students better. It was quote unquote outside of the classroom, even though it was online.
Or she can chat with her classmates, like Shane Roof, also in fifth grade last year, but in a separate class at Carter Elementary.
I just like how you can play with other students that are from your school and some not. You can meet people, you know.
Do you think that helps with the social part of school?
Yeah.
Are there people who you haven't talked to in class or at school that you'll talk to on this?
Yeah, like third graders and there's fourth graders. I talk to them.
Do you ever help people out with certain problems or?
Yeah.
Since meeting a common core standard by itself isn't cool enough to motivate your average fifth grader, the game has its own rewards. After correctly answering three questions about grids, Rachel earns this much cooler prize.
A sword called Stone Spider Slayer of the God.
And welcome back to our interview with JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens. We just heard how one teacher has adapted a game to teach those Common Core standards. Do you think teachers feel pretty comfortable at this point with how to adapt their curriculum to the standards?
I think everyone's on a journey, but I think they're getting better every day. And that working together in teams, being supported by the curriculum maps, and also sharing among the teachers is really important. We're adding a teacherpreneur, which is a half-time teacher who teaches, but the other half is work to create virtual communities of teachers that are sharing and talking about problems of practice.
This school year will be the first year JCPS will have the new teacher evaluation system that the school district piloted last year. Is the district ready for this?
We are ready. All of our principals have been trained. They've had to go through training and certification that they know what effective teaching looks like. Our teachers have been made aware of it. So we are piloting, and we've had a great group that we call the Educator Quality Oversight Committee that consists of five administrators and five teachers that have really been working together about how we roll this out in Jefferson County. So when you can imagine that everybody understands what effective teaching looks like and there are supports in place to help everybody get there, that's good not only for teachers, but it's certainly good for students and parents to know that we have this common understanding of what effective is like.
With all the controversy just surrounding standardized testing in general, what are you hearing with that aspect of the effectiveness or the evaluation process with teachers? Do they care much about it? Are they worried about it? Is there too much emphasis on that for them?
Well, it's definitely a system based on multiple measures, so not one measure. So it's not all about student growth. It's about observation and peer review and student voice. So there are multiple measures, which I think is really important. The other thing that Jefferson County, I think, has been leading along with other districts of innovation is alternative assessments. In our five-star schools, there are project-based learning. We know there are other ways that we need to assess student learning beyond the traditional standardized tests. And we very much want to move into that realm as well, is using other ways to assess student learning. And there's nothing like seeing a student present a project and evidence of their learning in a real world situation to a group of community members, for example. So we are working with that and with, in particular, with the five-star schools. So, and we've been very supportive of any legislation that would promote alternative assessments as well.
Jane on Facebook says, could you DNU by, I'm meaning maybe the district, maybe the state, maybe the federal government, could you de-emphasize standardized testing so that teachers have more incentives to stay? You need to be supporting the teachers in every way possible. Where are we with considering the way standardized testing is used? Do you feel comfortable with the way it's used currently? Would you like to see more flexibility from, and I know this is even a federal government issue, so.
Well, our board's legislative agenda actually talked about flexibility and alternative assessments. So we very much have been active in promoting different ways of assessing. But it's really important for students to know where they are. And so accountability is important as well. And we students need to be able to read and do math well. So when I look at one of the problems on that NAEP, which is a national test, and you see that some of our students couldn't do it, well, our students should be able to answer that problem. So I think, so we can say that standardized testing is bad, but when you really look at what it tells us, it does give us some indication of what our students can and can't do. And we know that our students need to be able to read well. We know that they need to be able to do math well. So when I look at a released item and some results around a released item and say, well, why couldn't all of our students answer that item? It's important for them to answer it. So it has to be put in perspective. There are lots of ways to measure success, but we are really shortchanging our students if we ever lower the bar that they need to be able to read well and do math well.
At the same time, I'm sure it makes you cringe when you hear teachers teaching to a test instead of feeling like they could teach the way people learn or what they feel like is most important.
And there's a really important distinction. What you do is you teach students so that they can master the standards, what they're expected to learn. It really isn't about the test. The test assesses, does the student know the standards? So teaching to the test is designing instruction that's test-like. I'm always doing some kind of practice around the test format. Instruction is supposed to teach students so that they can master the standards. The assessment is really secondary to that. So you should never be using the format of a test to guide your instruction. But when I've taught well and I've taught in really innovative ways and creative ways, when presented with the test, the students should be able to answer that question.
One question that we got and the story that got a lot of media attention over the past month or so was the cost and request of school supply lists. With the smaller list that the district is leasing, is what's the plan for teachers who also spend their own money on school supplies?
The plan is that parents will provide less supplies. The district and school will provide the other supplies. So there should be no impact on teachers. Teachers should need to have the supplies that they need. We just don't think that parents should be the source of those supplies.
Let's turn to some listener questions now. We asked folks to call in and leave a message for you, and the first one comes from Kristen.
My question is just, my son is in a wheelchair, and he doesn't have access to the playground at his elementary school. There's no paved pathway, and the school has applied twice to get funding for that from the county, and they've been denied twice. And currently, to get up to where the playground is, he has to drive around, actually in on the road at the entrance to the bus depot. It makes me crazy, feel crazy and nervous every single day, just worrying that a bus is not going to see this little kid in the wheelchair and it's going to hit him. And so I'm wondering what I as a parent need to do to try and get that funding, or what I can do to help encourage the school system to pay for it. Thank you so much.
And I think this question from Kristen is really about how she could either help out the school or help make the case for something, and I guess this could be for anything, that she feels the school needs with either Metro government funding or elsewhere. What can parents do in circumstances like that where they want to help a school find funding for something? Is there anything that they can do?
Well, what I encourage parents to do is talk to the principal. And then the principal has a supervisor who's called the area superintendent. And then, of course, we have a cabinet of people that supervise the divisions in the district. So to make those people aware, so the principal, the area superintendent, and in the case of a facilities issue, the chief operations officer. But do not hesitate to make people aware of what the concern is. And then we need to look at it, and we need to generate a response about what we're going to do about it.
The next question comes from Annette.
Why is it that we in the South End live in a more economically troubled place than a lot of other places, but our school uniforms cost every shirt we have to get says Olmsted on it. It's monogrammed on it, and it costs more than every other school. I don't mind buying school uniforms for my kids, but I do get upset when this school, the only one in Louisville, it costs more to send your child to school. That's a night's dinner for me, what I have to buy extra for my daughter's school.
Your response.
What we need to do is look at, from a system-wide level, what we're putting on as a burden for parents. So, and there has to be flexibility, and there has to be support for families who need it. One of the things, the clothing assistance program that the PTA runs, is really about providing parents and students what they need, so the burden isn't there. That's a great example of a burden on a parent that shouldn't be there.
We've been joined this hour by JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens for our annual Back to School special. And thank you so much for joining us this hour.
This has been a pleasure. Thank you. And we're excited about the 14-15 school year.
And we'll end with this. Last year, WFPL gave a recorder to Sarah Yost. She's a teacher at Westport Middle School, which was considered among the lowest achieving schools in JCPS a few years ago. Now it's beginning to make gains, not just in student achievement, but also with student behavior and culture. We asked Sarah to keep an audio diary for the year. She explains that making strides with students academically extends beyond the classroom. And in order to help students who are deemed at risk and to help struggling schools improve their academics and reputation, it takes teamwork and understanding each student's needs.
Students, we've had another great day. You all are doing a wonderful job of following procedures and directions and meeting expectations, so I want to congratulate you on that.
So we've begun school at last. It's now the second day of school at Westport Middle. The eighth graders are doing a great job so far, filing to class and following their teacher's instructions. And we're really happy to have gotten to this point, because when we first came, it wasn't always this orderly. It can be really difficult when kids have had 8 years in school, 13 years of their lives, of not having academic success, trying to make up those gaps and convince them that they are really truly capable. It's the sound of the 5 o'clock buses. Although today was a good day, it was also kind of a hard day, because one of my little students, one of my highest performers, just in terms of, what her raw talent is and how articulate she is and how effortlessly she can master the standards and do the work and how quickly she understands texts. But I'd noticed of late that her work was kind of going down the tubes. It was not very impressive. Things as simple as, like, she wasn't writing complete sentences when she was directed to, and her answers were scraping the surface and not, like, really comprehending the texts. And I pulled her into my classroom and I was like, what's going on with your work? Like, why the drop in performance instead of a growth like you would normally expect to see? And she just, sort of shrugged her shoulders at first, and then she just opened up. She's very articulate, so she was able to really get into the details of some of the things that are happening at home, and just the stress that she's under because she doesn't know, you know, where to get food stamps. But there's no food at home. And her mom, you know, is giving plasma twice a week, and that's what they're living on. And, you know, she tries to hide the money from dad, who's an addict. I know there are services out there for her. She knows that there might be two, but she doesn't know how to access them. So luckily for us, we have a social worker from U of L, and she was immediately able to come up to my room and give her some pointers about where in the Portland neighborhood she could go to find the services that she needs. It's just so much stress for a 14-year-old to be under. I told her, you know, that this is what I'm here for, and this is why I got into education. This is why I specifically got into public education. But we'll get her back on track, and we'll make sure that she is ready for high school and she's ready for that K-prep, because, you know, when they judge us and we judge how we're doing, it all comes down to that test.
I'm Devin Kadiyama. This has been a production of 89.3 WFPL, Louisville's NPR news station. You can find these stories and more education coverage on our website at WFPL.org. Thanks for joining us.